Today, I'm joined by the founder of Sophie Patterson Interiors, Sophie herself. Since launching her studio in 2008, Sophie has completed over 80 luxury projects worldwide, but it's her strategic use of social media that's transformed her business into the global luxury brand that it is today. With over a million followers across Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, Sophie has built a loyal international audience, opened doors for collaborations, and attracted clients from around the world. Today, in her episode, she shares how founders can use social media platforms not just to showcase their work, but to grow a business, build credibility, and reach global customers, and also how to set boundaries around it. Hi, Sophie. Thank you for joining How to Start Up today. It is great to have you on the show because I know we're going to talk about all things social media as a founder. But before we do that, I'd love it if you could introduce a bit about yourself and the business that you've started.
Hi, Juliet. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Sophie Patterson, founder of Sophie Patterson Interiors. We're a high-end interior design studio. We do projects all over the world. And we also have several product lines that we do in collaboration with other brands, such as furniture, wallpaper, home accessories. And then most recently, I've just launched an online interior design course called the Sophie Patterson Academy.
And when did you start your business?
Oh, gosh, I actually can't remember life pre-Sophie Patterson Interiors. I've been known to introduce myself as Sophie Patterson Interiors before. I set up the business in 2008, and I did a couple of projects for a developer before that. So, yeah, nearly half my life.
And with social media, when did you start using that for your business?
So my social media journey happened very organically because I remember I had a web developer at the time who told me she was going to put a link. Instagram didn't even exist, but she told me she was going to put a link to Facebook. And she said, if I do this, you must update it regularly. She was very strict because it looks bad if it's not regular. I've got her to thank for joining Facebook. And I guess that was probably around sort of 2009. We set up a Facebook interiors page. But actually, I don't do that page anymore. And that was really key because I ended up posting about our projects, behind the scenes, what I was doing. And my whole driver for doing that was I didn't have enough projects necessary to populate an entire website. But I remember being a recent graduate and all my friends was going off into corporates and they were all talking about their big high-flying jobs. And I didn't want them all to be thinking, oh, she's just dossing about, fluffing cushions. So it was more from an ego thing that I was like, no, look, I am doing real work. And so I'd put quite a lot of content on that Facebook page. And through that Facebook page, I actually found my first non-developer client, a private client. And then I joined Instagram in 2012. Again, didn't really know what I was doing. I don't think any of us realized how important social media would be. My very first post was a bottle of champagne. It was more like typical older millennial, like, oh, does this work? Has this gone on? Is this out in the world wide web? And then very quickly, it took a different turn.
And where has it ended up today for you in social media? How integral to your business is it?
I mean, huge. I think it's fair to say social media has built my business. It's such a big part of our business. It's how we get our private clients for our interior design projects. Most of our clients now, I can pinpoint either they found me through one of our various social media platforms, whether that's YouTube or Instagram, or their friend who recommended us to them originally came through social media. So I think it's been so key for that side of the business, also for driving the sales of all our collections for our online academy. It's been massive for us. And I think with that huge audience, we've got over a million people that follow us across our different platforms. I also feel a huge sense of responsibility. So as much as it builds and drives our business, in some ways it slows me down because I say no to so much that gets offered to me because I feel this sense of responsibility. You know, I'm not just selling to a blind audience. I know these people. We've engaged over years and years. They've watched my journey. We've had conversations in DMs that I really care about what I put on my platform, what I recommend to them. It's been great for the business, but you feel a big sense of responsibility with it as well.
I've often called it a necessary evil because I've struggled with it, but only because I've struggled with my own boundaries with it. And I've set myself time limits and all that kind of thing. And everyone said, do you really need it? I said, yes, because it forms part of our lookbook. So if somebody hears about us, they'll check out our website, they'll check out our LinkedIn post, they'll check out our Instagram, they'll get a sense of who we are and they can get to know us without even emailing us or calling us. For you, has it provided that sort of screening as part of the screening process with clients?
Most of my clients aren't very active on social media. And yeah, we always, before we work with someone, obviously we'll do a little bit of research just to make sure that we're the right fit. We can only take on a certain amount of clients every year. But yeah, I think like a lot of our clients will not only feel familiar and comfortable with me, but like members of our team as well that all feature on YouTubes or Instagram. And it's really nice for them because they feel like they know our team before they even start working. And they're also quite familiar with our process because they've watched various videos about, we share a lot of our process online, not only through our online design academy, but also like free content on YouTube and Instagram. So I feel like they feel a bit more prepared because I think hiring an interior designer is a really intimidating thing. No matter where you are in life, no matter what budget you've got, you're essentially trusting someone with your biggest asset. So having that kind of insight and soft instruction through social media, I think has been really helpful for them.
Going back to the beginning, what were the first few posts that you really thought this is going to move the needle for your business?
I didn't really realize it was going to move the needle, to be honest. The reason why, aside from being told off by my web developer and said, you have to post this regularly, for me, what really like drove me to post regularly was having a sense of community, because I think as a founder, it's so lonely. And I worked by myself for 5 years. I did all the jobs in the business and I worked from my garage. And I just really wanted to be able to connect with like-minded people. I loved the fact that I could reach out to different brands in the industry, other designers, and have that kind of sense of community and relationships. And for me, I was just sharing what I was doing because I still had that kind of like wide-eyed enthusiasm and just thought, wow, this is so cool. I'm so passionate about design. I can't believe I'm getting to do this and people are hiring me to do their home. And I wanted to share not just the end results, but also the process. So I think that for me was really important, having that sense of community. And I think that then transferred into like the content that I was posting. Then I realized my audience were becoming my community and I was building a community there. And a lot of them could relate to me. A lot of them were maybe aspiring interior designers or people doing up their own home. And they really loved the fact that I was sharing behind the scenes, like real raw behind the scenes, not just the end pretty pictures. And also bits of my life as well. You know, I think if you're going to be on social media, you said it yourself, like you've got to have boundaries. What are you comfortable with? And it's not just important for yourself to have those boundaries, but also for your audience because they want consistency. So if 1 week you decide to share loads of your life and it comes out of the blue from having never shared anything about your life, you're confusing your audience. If they happen to have not seen a post for yours, which can happen quite easy with the algorithm, how it is, and then all of a sudden up pops a story about your gym routine and they're like, who's this person? I'm not interested in gym routines. Unfollow. You have to work out what you're comfortable with and then do that consistently so that it's on brand. You've thought about it. It's not just maybe you've had a glass of champagne on a Friday night and you're like, well, let's post this. Everything should be really considered because your personal brand is your brand.
How did you work out what content you should be posting and when? Because there's so much around content of sort of the type of visual. Is it video? Is it carousel? Is it reel versus how often? What time of day? How did you learn all of that?
It's been trial and error, I would say. You kind of work out what your audience resonates with. And not every audience is the same. You know, what my audience likes when they're active will be different to someone else's. So I just have this like idea in my head. And for me, even now, even though it's like such a big business and this is so key to it, I do like to keep it quite organic because I'm a real geek and I'm constantly researching. I love like nothing more on a Saturday night than like diving into a podcast about what the algorithm wants or different ideas. And I think if you get too structured and you're like, well, Monday, this is our content pillar, Wednesday, this is our content pillar, you don't allow yourself to have that ability to flex. So we still do it organically. And I did everything on social media myself up until April. I hired a social media manager. Well, she wants to hire one social media manager, but I hired two because they were both so amazing. And that's been amazing for me in terms of being able to create more content, hit more platforms. We do everything in-house. And I thought it was going to free up some of my time, but actually I think it's so important to have that personal aspect. I think you can always tell if a founder or someone key in the business is involved with the social media strategy because it feels more current, it feels more relevant. And what I think is really important with your social media, no matter what business you're doing, is it's got to be almost like a little bit you're seeing something that you're not meant to see. Like you're really kind of spying on behind the scenes. If it's too polished, it just becomes a bit boring.
You were so right. And I was listening to the news this morning saying that half the internet is AI generated and not real. But does that matter? And it was around the moral aspect of content. And if AI is talking to AI, if humans talking to AI, we've all been absorbing content that's been pre-written or pre-recorded and edited. Where is that line? But I'm so with you. I enjoy content where I can relate to the person giving it to me. And I know that for myself, like posting from my LinkedIn is very different from posting to our company's LinkedIn. And we almost shouldn't really bother having a company LinkedIn because people much rather hear first person. For you, what do you think has helped grow such a loyal community over the years? Because you're across, I believe, Instagram, TikTok and YouTube.
That's correct. I think just sharing honestly and openly, I'm quite an open and honest person. And often, even with our online course, I said to my team, I want to include a little black book of all of our favorite suppliers. And they were like, oh, okay. They're like, so even this supplier? Yes. Even this supplier? Yes. And like they were shocked, but they were like, why are we giving so much of this IP away? Like this is too important for our business. But I disagree. I think like the more you share and the less you focus on gatekeeping and just, I don't feel that like by empowering other people, I'm disempowering myself. I feel like if you share and you help others, my clients aren't hiring me because of like the place where I get my curtains made or where I get my furniture or my carpet from. They're hiring us for our vision and our customer service and our ability to design their home and make it as good as it can be for them. So I think that translates through to the free content we share on social media as well. Like we do share really openly. We do really help our followers. You know, if they'll DM me, even if there's nothing in it for me, me or one of my social medias will respond to them. We share what we can and we really want to help our audience. And I think they can feel that. They can feel that this, for me, you know, my social media didn't start as a business strategy. It started as a sense of community and that continues to this day. And I think they can see the difference. You know, we're all wisened to, you know, swipe up, buy there, swipe up and like false recommendations. And I think when you stay authentic, your audience stays very loyal to you.
And you build the trust. And as going back to the top of the conversation where your clients are trusting you with their home, you want to build the trust. It's so interesting to hear you say this because I'm constantly sitting on a fence of what do we give away? What do we just automatically want to share, be helpful versus we do need to have a cash flow. We are a business. We're not a charity. Where do you draw that line? And with content, given it takes a lot of time, even organic natural content does take time, just even sit down and post and think through what caption and link you might want to include. Do you have a sort of set amount of time per week that you give it and then you stop? Or do you just let it run ragged and do as much as you possibly can?
I think the main focus of our business is the like the couture interior design aspect. So my clients that are paying design fees, they always come first and everything else has to be slotted in around it. That's why, you know, with social media, I've got social media managers, I'm still really heavily involved, but they know, you know, they work full time for me. They know what's going on in the business. If I'm flying to America for a project, they're not going to be able to capture content. So we plan some stuff ahead. But equally, we've got a lot of conversations going. You know, I was in LA and San Francisco last week for a project and I was messaging them saying, look, I know I approved all the content, but can you just send me like the outline of what we're posting so that if I was to post from LA, it's not looking unnatural with what you're posting on the grid. But I don't think you can necessarily put in a time limit. I think you just go with it when you can. And especially when I was doing it by myself before I had social media managers, I would take breaks sometimes. Like I know it's really bad for the algorithm, but it's also about your mental health. And if I was going through something tough and I needed to take some time off, then I would take time off. And like our audience were really sweet. I would return like 2 weeks later and they'd be like, are you okay? You posted every day for the last 10 years. I'm really worried about you. And that's so nice. But the algorithm will punish you for that. So it's like a big decision. And I don't like to post in advance or like schedule things too much. So that's been the one benefit for me now. And I know that I'm in a really lucky position that I've now built the business where I can afford to have two social media managers. And I think for us, it's proved itself that it's like such a key part of our business. It's worth investing in. I'm actually going to hire another person, not so that I can remove myself from it, but just so I can make sure that their workload is manageable. They often say to me, I don't know how you did this all by yourself. There's two of us plus you. They work flat out. Often they'll want to stay there for like an hour after work. And I'm pushing them out the office saying, got to go home. Got to have a life.
But that's, it's endless. And I think in any path of starting a business, and I knew this already when I came into it from communications and PR, because you could always pitch another editor. You can always find another angle. There is no finished to-do list. And having OCD and going into communications was probably a terrible idea. I should have learned that was not good for me. But starting a business, that you could always do more. And I think with social media, I constantly sit on the fence with my team. They debate with me and challenge me on it of, you could do more founder-led content, you could do more to camera. I'm like, yes, but I don't want to. And I don't feel like I've got anything to say, and I'm definitely not going to do a get ready with me or anything like that. But they're like, well, the algorithm will thank you for it. And I'm like, I don't want my life ruled by an algorithm. And that's my choice. And I know that we're missing out from awareness and engagement and potentially clients. But it's sort of drawing that line that I've set up a business. It has to work for me. I can't give everything to it.
Yeah.
How did you find that boundary for yourself?
I think that's, I love, see, this is what I love about podcasts. And I love actually coming on podcasts. I very rarely get to speak to other, particularly women in business, and like have these conversations. I don't think this is something that I've ever spoken to a man about, but I probably have a different perspective. And because I get asked a lot by sort of new designers or people that want to set up their own business, like, what should I do? And I don't always follow my own advice, but as you're saying to me, like you're saying, your team are saying you should do more talking to camera pieces, I agree with them. And I think, like, I am an introvert. I hate being filmed. I still, even though I've done it for 5 years, multiple times every week, I still get anxiety. When I was filming my online course, I filmed consistently for a year to produce 14 hours of content. And it was like, just talking to a camera, like engaging. But, you know, when I'm filming my YouTube, walking around a project, I find that a lot less intense. But I feel like it's really important to try these things, because if you want to grow your business, you have to like be willing to put yourself out of your comfort zone. And as soon as you say that, that's the same advice I give aspiring designers. And it makes me laugh because I'll see them year on year, like at different events and different talks I'm doing. They're like, oh, I did it. And I actually follow them because I really am interested and engaged in their journey. And I'm like, yeah, go you. I'm like, so proud of you. You're doing it. And then I'm thinking to myself, but you haven't done any to camera pieces for a while, and you know it would be good for your engagement too. And so it's in the back of my mind all the time. And I also say to my social media team, please don't ask me if you can film me. Just film everything. Like, me and the team will get used to you just filming, and we'll relax into it, because real content is so much more interesting. Like, I'd almost rather you put a mic on me the minute I arrive in the day and then take it off, because I have to be able to multitask. I can't just, yeah, I'll have some days set aside if we've got to film a particular campaign or we've got to shoot. The level of content they want from me, I can't just set that time aside. I've got to be actually able to run the business. And it comes back to thinking, like, what do I find most interesting? Well, I love reality TV when it's like really real. Like, I'll admit, I love the Kardashians, and I know people love to hate them, but I'm full of admiration for them, because what they've built, how they've monetized things, it's so impressive. And yet it must be so tempting for them to like really edit out the bad bits, but they keep it in, and that's what people love to see. And I'm not saying necessarily that I would do that, but I think my approach to social media, and like I always like to think every year, like, what am I going to do for the business? For social media next year, I want to be more vulnerable and more open. I'm going to be renovating my home. And we all know, you know, you're renovating right now. You know, there's so many highs and lows. And I think it will be really interesting to see that from the perspective of sort of fly on the wall of watching a designer go through the highs and lows.
Yes.
Just like everyone else does. You know, I've got budget. I just got the prices back from my contractors and all the subcontractors this week. I've totally blown the budget. I'm about three times over the budget. And now I've got to scale back. And it's like,
so it happens to the best of them. This is reassuring.
And like, as much as it's horrible to live it, this is going to make great content. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, this is really annoying. I'm like, don't skip out this bit. Get the team to film you being really stressed out about the fact that we've now got to...
The honesty and the vulnerability of it as well, the humanity, people can relate to that. And that's why I think I love podcasting so much, because it's, everyone understands a conversation like this today, we'll have listeners and we're all comfortable with the fact that we have eavesdroppers and we're welcoming them in. And it's almost like you're sitting in a cafe and you're dropping on a couple sitting next to you, and everyone's all right with it.
Yeah.
And it's one rung down on that vulnerability. A, because it's not live, it's not necessarily my face, and I can edit it if I need to. But my team of like, you're too polished, you're too well trained. If you were more you, like the dad jokes and the silliness that we get to see, your listeners will bond with that more. And I think with podcasting, it's really hard as well, because it is recorded and you put it out on, it's a one-way street and you don't get any feedback. With social media, you can get quite a lot of feedback, both positive and negative, unfortunately. Yeah. But you're making me laugh, because I remember last year when I moved house, I was like, right, two things next year. I'm going to get to the Antarctic and see the penguins, and I'm going to move to Charlbury in the Cotswolds. My friend's like, okay, then whatever. Turns out going to the Antarctic is way easier than buying a house in the Cotswolds, especially when you're self-employed. When I started painting, and I thought in my delirium of tiredness, I time-lapsed myself and chucked up on Instagram. Never have I had more engaged content than me painting a room in old sweatpants from school days compared to like Antarctica with penguins. Like, guys, seriously? And recently I went to Uganda to see gorillas. I'm like, no one cares. They want to care. They really care about pain. Even a 23-year-old in the village is like, Jules, I'm so invested. Which room are you going to do next? I was like, what is that? I'm the same. Like, and this is in terms of the type of business you're in. It plays really well to visual content. So it works very well on social media. I'd argue that as a PR and a podcast consultancy, our content isn't as engaging for social media because it's not as visual. It's much more audio. I mean, I'm trying to make excuses not to do it. Do you think they should consider their social media use or content strategy?
I think you should consider it a lot. And I think touching on that point about, is it aesthetic? That's a really interesting perspective because it does definitely help that I've got like visually engaging. Lovely. I can do before and afters with designing beautiful homes all over the world. And most of our clients do let us share their homes, which is amazing. But actually, what I've realized is like, we'll spend a lot of money on production. We'll have videographers, professional photographers. We'll put together these beautiful posts or reels or videos. And then it will do well. It will be good. But when I think how much money and time we invest in it, I'm like, was that really worth it? Then equally, I will go around with my shaky little iPhone where the lighting's not like perfectly set and put like a reel up that I haven't even thought about. And it might do 5 times as well. So I think people overly worry about like having a really curated feed. I do like a curated feed because I also am a perfectionist. And I think that's like part of our brand. We need to make sure it looks good and people are going to judge us. But what I think is a really good hack is if you don't have like a beautifully designed office or maybe not everything you're doing is like really visually engaging, is do carousel posts. Carousel posts are doing so well anyways. Instagram loves them. And have the cover image something beautiful, whether it's like text with a nice background, or you could do a personal branding shoot where you look great, you look really empowering and inspirational. And then afterwards, you can have the carousels or the videos of whatever your content is that's like really educational and like really adds a lot of value, but doesn't necessarily look as good.
I think people do get a little bit paralyzed with fear, and Canva can only get you so far in terms of the design. So as a member of my team that is art, basically, she's now head of brand. She took over the whole design of our business, redesigned the website, redid all the Instagram. And I now send her stuff saying, can you sign this off for me, Francesca? And she's like, do you know it's your company? I'm like, yes, but you're really good for the border. She's very, her eye is amazing. This is it. It can hold you back to be perfectionist about it. That's a really good hack. What other hacks do you have for us?
Oh, another one that I do, and this was triggered by something you said, is like, I've become less a perfectionist. Like, I think we can all criticize ourselves. We can all hate the sound of our own voice or think, oh, does that sound silly? I'll review everything that goes out. I watch the full YouTube, but I don't worry about like how I'm coming across. Like, I think we're just our own worst critics. So I will let stuff go out. And once I've reviewed it, just to make sure there's no like mistakes or anything like that, then I won't think about it. Like, I just move straight on to the next thing. And I also don't worry about if there's any negative comments. You know, I'm really lucky for the number of followers we've got. We get very rarely any kind of negative comments. I can't remember the last one, but there'll always be the odd thing. If it's about a client's home, I will remove it because I'm like, that you can say what you want about me and my home, but that's that person's private property and they've been kind enough to share it. But if anyone ever says anything critical about me, I just don't take it personally. I've had over the years, you know, I got caught out by some journalist that worked for the Daily Mail and she said, can we do this article? And this is what the headline's going to be and this is what it's going to be about. And I think the original title was, is this the most beautiful home in the UK? And I was like, fantastic. Like, you can't get better PR. Amazing. Sign me up. And then what she proceeded to do, it did really well, the online version. And then I clicked on a few hours later because I was getting all these messages from friends being like, are you okay? And my daughter was really young. I think she was like 6 months old at the time and I'd taken her swimming. I was only working part-time that day. And she'd changed the title from what we'd agreed to the new mum to make all other mothers jealous. She'd gone through my Instagram, taking like photos that I'd shared. And it was just like that typical sort of Daily Mail angle where they were like, we're just going to get the trolls out. And there was 2,000 comments of absolute vitriol poison. But it was so bad. I remember I had two of my designers staying with me because my husband was traveling for work, that we opened a bottle of wine that night and we were reading them out loud to each other. And we were literally like rolling around laughter. And I was like, this is actually, I'm so glad that I had this because the comments couldn't be any worse. And it kind of just teaches you and you think about, well, who is it that's got time to read the Daily Mail online and then also write a comment in the middle of a day on a Tuesday? It's someone that's sat at home that's maybe not necessarily that happy. And I think, like, if you are the kind of person that wants to go out of your way to write something negative, then I'm not really interested in your opinion, because you're probably not going to be someone that I admire or respect. And after that, things just don't affect me. I just think, oh, it says more about you than it does about me. I'm very comfortable with who I am. I know I'm a good person. I know we do good work. So if it upsets you, then that's your issue.
In the last few episodes, I've asked quite a few of the founders how they've managed social media. And the topic of the episode could be something completely different, but we've always ended up on that topic at the end recently, which I thought was quite interesting and quite useful. Now we're talking to you about it. That boundary, it was reposed, and her question for you for this episode is from her, but she was saying she just doesn't handle social media well. And at some point she'd like to be social media free because she's not handling it well. And that boundary is really, really important to put in. And I think at the end of this year, I've concluded it works for my business, but I need to be better boundaried with it. What advice would you give to founders on how to create those boundaries for themselves?
I think maybe think about what aspect of social media doesn't feel good to you. Is it you're worried about people's comments? Is it, and I think this is quite a common one, like, are you consuming too much content of your competitors and making you feel like you're not good enough or you should be doing more? And I think for me, like, I feel bad, but I don't have time to consume content anymore. Like, I spend all my time either running the business or producing content. And I think that's where the shift's been for me, is if I'm looking at something and I'm like, this is making me stressed or making me not feel good enough, I don't want to unfollow anyone, but I'll just mute them. I don't need to consume this content anymore. Like, I still support you, but what you're sharing doesn't make me feel good. So I'm just not going to waste my time looking at it.
That's where I sort of would go down rabbit holes of seeing other in different, or my sector. But it's like, well, I've decided not to do this and that's on me. They have decided to become a to-camera founder and their choice. And I think if I could remember my strategy for myself, I would have a better boundary with it rather than those when you're knackered, you probably haven't slept, you've had a stressful client or something like that. And then you see something on Instagram where someone seemingly is killing it in some area. But you also forget that social media is only the positive stuff. You never really see the gritty. And maybe that's why the vulnerability does well, because people do want to see a bit more grit and a bit more real.
Another thing that I've taught myself over the years is there's a cost attached to everything. So fine, you want to go out there and you want to be like absolutely smashing it. You want to see your followers go through the roof. You want to be doing projects all over the world. The cost attached to that is, for me personally, I will be stressed. I'll spend less time with my family. I might feel overwhelmed. I might get burnt out. So I don't actually feel envious when I see other people having teams of like 50, 60 people. That's just not something I aspire to. The success I want is, you know, I love doing my job. I love being able to do a really good job for my clients. I know how many projects I can take on every year and deliver something really good for them. I feel stressed if I don't feel like I'm delivering enough value for people. And then with the scalable areas of my business, you know, I thought quite a few years ago, I want to be able to scale my business. The way I'm going to scale my business is not by taking on more staff, taking on more projects, because everyone wants me. I can only divide myself so many ways. I'll feel guilty if I'm not giving them what I should be. I'll do the online, I'll do the collections, I'll do the products. And again, I didn't want to do that all in-house because then I've got to hire more people. I'm going to have a staff of like 60 people. I don't find that relaxing either. I don't particularly like managing people. So I did that all with other people who I thought were the best at what they do. You know, it was all tried and tested. We'd worked with them for our design projects. I knew they had great quality. I knew they had great customer service and I felt safe aligning with them. That's really scalable. All I have to do is design it and then promote it. Do some shoots every, you know, twice a year. And they deal with all the logistics, they deal with all the manufacturing. So I think you can scale in different ways. And I think we've sort of had this real transition for our sort of generation of like what success used to look like and now what success can look like now. And I don't want to just work harder. I just want to work smarter. I want to enjoy the success I've already got. I want to enjoy my life. Nothing's given. And I always think probably like two or three times a week, I remind myself, is this going to be important on my deathbed? Am I going to regret this? So I think the only thing I'll regret is not having spent more time with my family, not having done the things that I kept putting off, whether it was going to the Antarctic and seeing the penguins or, you know, going on a safari, whatever it is that I want to do, I make sure that I'm on track. And you said that you kind of write things that you want to do next year. And I do exactly the same thing. Every December, I'll review my year that I've had. And I think, what do I want to do next year? And I divide it into different sections. I have one for business. I have one for social media. I have one for like financial things. I have one for holidays I want to do. I have one for my health. I have one for my kids and even one for my husband. And I'll sort of write like however many things I can think of, whether it's like 5 or 10 under each section. And it's not like a New Year's resolution because it's not something I'm going to beat myself up with. I don't have to do everything, but just try and do like a couple from each section. And that means that you're keeping your life balanced, because if all your success is financial, but you've had no holidays, you've had no date nights, you've had no time for the things that are important to you, then that's not going to be a successful year. And then my other rule that I do with that, and this is really key because I noticed I've been doing it since like 2014, was that if something stays on my list for 3 consecutive years and doesn't get done, I have to do it in the 3rd year. So you hold yourself accountable. But the thing that I had to do this year, what I was really happy about, was I had to go away to a spa. I went to the original FX Maya clinic in Austria, just somewhere I'd wanted to go, and spent 10 days by myself just doing complete self-care. But that was really important for me because I think after, you know, we just launched the online design course in June, I'd worked flat out with all our projects and my life was out of balance. And I knew that it was time. I had to like go there and I'd be a better mum, I'd be a better boss, a better designer if I...
Time flies so bloody quickly when you run a business. Like I've never seen it before. If you don't kind of put those anchor stops in your calendar, and we are recording this mid-December, about to enter 2026, those pivotal yearly changes, someone said, it's just another cup and it's still another day. It doesn't matter. It's the 1st of January. But it's quite a useful anchor point to be like, well, what went well this year? What didn't go so well? What did I enjoy? What didn't I enjoy? Because you are responsible so much for your business and yourself. And if you're not looking after yourself, you're definitely not looking after your business. And our episode is going to come out after we're doing the 12 days of Christmas, where we're rerunning all of our health and wellness episodes, because this is a really shit time for founders. You come to the end of the year, you've probably burnt out, your family are trying to tell you to take time off and you probably can't. But I love the fact that you're kind of pulling yourself out of the weeds of the business and looking at it as well as your life, because the business does need to help you live a life as well. It can't just all be about work. I find that really exciting. And that success metric as well, it's so hard to actually work out what you want to do, because once you know what you want to do, you can work out a path to get there. But what matters question is really, really key. And for you, the question we had from our last guest, which is Rian from Artar, the supplement brand, I don't know if you've come across it, but insanely beautiful packaging and an amazing, amazing product. She is a ex-professional swimmer, a naturopath and nutritionist, and has launched this beautiful supplements brand that's killing it. But she said she didn't really have great boundaries with social media. But her question for you was, what has been the most impactful change you have made to drive success within your business?
I think this year's been like a change. And actually, yeah, you've nailed it on the head. It's those two things. But it beyond that, it's trusting my gut. Because when I told my team and I told people around me, I'm going to launch this academy, this is what I'm going to include in it, everyone was like, I think you're giving away too much value. I don't think this is good for your brand. Is this really on brand? You know, you're a really high-end interior designer. Is this making you too accessible? Same with hiring 2 social media managers. Everyone really questioned, like, do we really need 2 social media managers? But I think both times I kind of went against the grain and I really listened to all my team and I listened to people around me. But I think as I've got older, I've learned to trust my gut more. And I was like, I can't explain it and I don't really want to justify it. I just know this is the right thing to do. It's the right thing for the business. And it both have worked out incredibly well. And I think that's been really empowering. And what I'm taking from that moving forward is to trust myself more. You know, I think as a woman in business, you don't want to be too bolshy. You don't want to be seen as a bossy woman. You like really feel like you've got to be very sort of balanced and considered. And I think that's true. But I think most of us talk ourselves out of doing what we think is right. And we can be swayed by other people that are maybe slightly more confident in how they tell you to do things. Whereas now I'm adamant. I'm like, no, like, I want to hear what you guys are going to say. Like, it might change my mind, but it equally might not. And you might not understand this vision that I've got, but we're on this journey and we're going to pursue it. So I think just trusting yourself, and I wish that you could have the confidence, or I wish I could have had the confidence that I've got now in my 40s and that conviction in my early 20s when I set up the business, because I think that's been the hardest earned thing to get to, is just trust in myself.
Well, I'm so grateful I started when I was 29, because I had years of work experience with other brands and other processes and protocols and best practice, worst practice. And I had experience, and I often admire people who start in their 20s who are just like, they go and they work it out as they do, learn by doing. And I mean, I'm doing that too, for sure. But yeah, trust your gut feeling.
Yeah, intuition. And my husband says that often, like, a lot of the most successful founders he knows, he thinks, or actually his brother had this theory that it's like positive narcissism, where you can't see what you've done wrong and you just have total conviction in yourself. And I was like, yeah, I think you do need to have that. But I don't like the word narcissist, but it's a sliding scale. We all have...
Well, self-belief.
Self-belief is another word for it. But I think if you let your inner critic take control, you will never do anything. Like, you have to just believe in yourself and don't think about things that are going to go wrong, because all the things you can anticipate going wrong probably won't. And something that you never could have imagined going wrong will go wrong, and you'll probably get through it.
And don't waste time on worry. It's definitely something I've learned the hard way. It's quite a handy one. But someone said very early doors in the pod saying, if you don't believe in it, no one else is going to. So you do need a bit of blind belief of like, I'm just going to try. And who knows? Who knows? I mean, if you told me 6 years ago that I'd be producing podcasts and hosting a ranking chart podcast, God, it never occurred to me. And I'm so thrilled that it has happened. Happy accidents. And what would your question be for the next guest?
I think my question would be, you know, I would love to know from your next guest, when did they know they needed to bring in like a higher level of management? Because I think that requires a real element of trust that you're handing over control over big decisions in your business. So when did you feel that you were ready to do that? And how did that work out for you?
That is an expensive mistake to get wrong. And it's also really hurtful when it goes wrong as well. The heart and the head are very invested in that because it's your baby. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a founder.
I tried it and it gone back near it. But at some point I would like to try it again. But it's such a pivotal decision.
What role did you hire for that one was?
When I started, I was calling myself a director. And this woman came in and said, well, you're going to have to be managing director because I'm a director. And I was like, fine, I'll promote myself. But hilarious, but I'm still taking home the same money or lack thereof at the time. And it was year two. And she was a senior hire, typically, I think, same amount of experience I had, but just didn't work to the attention to detail that we needed for clients. The output wasn't as qualitative as we needed. And it just very, very quickly became very obvious it wasn't going to work. And I think I learned the hard way that I'd originally bolstered having long probation periods and long notice periods as well. And I've now changed it to long probation periods, but short notice periods, because when it doesn't work for either party, they want out. You want them out. They either want to leave or you don't want them to be there. And the time needs to be as short as possible. And it's very expensive if they have a long notice period. So I learned the hard way with that one. But every day is a school day.
Yeah, you never stop learning.
No. And it's so nice now having gone through some difficult situations, because I've learnt and I will never forget stuff in a lot of those situations. So I'm quite enjoying being at the 6 year spot, because it's like, I know our payment terms. I know what sorts of clients we want to work with. I know what a good day at work looks like. I know how my brain works at work. So I feel like I've hit more of a groove. But the first 2-3 years, and Rian said the same, it takes at least 3 years to kind of find your feet.
Definitely. I feel like it took me a solid 10 years to find my feet and build the business to a point where it felt like it was a proper business as well. Like, I think working from home initially, I didn't necessarily take myself that seriously and didn't price accordingly and couldn't really see how I was going to transition the business. I think having a separate office and building your team, that's what it's taken for me to see, oh yeah, I have built a real business. Like, this is,
it's not you and it, it's I'm employed just by a business that I started, and it's sort of bigger than you, which is quite a nice feeling, but the responsibility obviously of people comes with that.
And I think as it gets bigger, the hard thing is like separating what's right for you versus what's right for the business, because often those are two completely different things. And if you don't want the business to be running your life, you've got to be okay with making decisions that are going to maybe hold that business back.
Oh, that's such good advice. Thank you, Sophie, so much for your time today. It's been great chatting to you about all things social media.
Oh, I've loved it. I could chat with you all afternoon.
If you'd like to contact Sophie, you can find all of her details in the show notes, along with a recap of the advice that she has so kindly shared. You can also hear her answer to Rian from Artar's episode from last week on what was the most pivotal change she made in her business to grow her success.